The country of Iran is in the news this Christmas season, as the country of Iran was part of the Christmas story 2,000 years ago. Of course, then it wasn't called Iran, it was called Persia, and it was the home country and the starting point for the Magi. Sometimes they're called wise men, and usually we number them about three. Although there have been myths and legends that have multiplied over the centuries about these magi, they are ancient legends that say that there were a dozen of them. That number has dwindled down to three in all probability because there were three gifts that they brought, although we don't know the exact number. And in later centuries, there has been speculation that has actually given the name to these three wise men. They are called Caspar and Melchior and Belshazzar, and they are even described in terms of the color of their skin and their facial appearances. The fact is that these magi were part of a priestly class in Persia around the first century. They were astronomers and astrologers. They were kind of what today we would call New Age. The word magic is connected to the word magi, and they were sort of magicians. They certainly were not Jews. They absolutely were not Christians. They did not know the Bible. They were Gentiles. They were pagans. They were hardly the sort of people that anyone would expect to be included in the Christmas story along with Joseph and Mary and the shepherds and the angels. But they become part of the Christmas story through the words written by Matthew that after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. As students of the stars, and the Magi were that, they actually kept detailed records of astronomy that went back for generations. As students of the stars, they noticed something that they hadn't seen before. It was a star that seemed beckoning, attracting, and calling them to a westward journey. And much speculation has been made ever since about what this star may be. There are Christian scientists who have devoted their whole lives to studying all of this and writing about it. There are some who think it was Halley's Comet, which, by the way, appeared in the year 1211 BC. But, you know, it really doesn't match up with the rest of the historical markers in the Bible and in secular history. So there are others that have proposed that instead it was a supernova that with brilliant intensity flamed out and then over following months diminished. And still others who say that perhaps it was a conjunction of the planets Jupiter and Saturn. And indeed, there were three times in the year 7 BC when there was such a conjunction. However, it's kind of hard to imagine that any of these explanations could be sort of an ancient map quest that would get you directly to the house that you're looking for, that any star or comet could be specific enough to show someone to a particular address. So maybe we should think of it differently. Perhaps it was some celestial supernatural appearance that God concocted, never preceded and never succeeded, just for that one time. Or maybe it was an angel that sort of functioned as a star, kind of like the angels that appear to the shepherds in the hills outside of Bethlehem. In those days, there were rumors afloat across the ancient world that something big was about to happen, some great world leader. And there was a subset of that rumor that claimed that the leader may, in fact, be a Jew. But even when you put together this brilliant, unusual, unprecedented star and the rumors of the day, it still was a courageous thing for these magi to set out on what would be a 2-year, just going one direction journey in order to find the king of the Jews. They must have spent a fortune of their own money and a significant percentage of their lifetime on this journey of faith. It's interesting to me because I think that sometimes there are Christians who view people of other backgrounds and religions and beliefs as the enemy. Matthew, in telling this story, clearly did not see it this way, but rather he anticipated that Jesus had come to draw people to himself who were of all different religious and ethnic and national backgrounds, that Jesus would find searchers and seekers in every variety of people that would be drawn to Jesus. Well, the Magi got as far as Jerusalem, and they got stuck. So maybe there were clouds and maybe the star disappeared, but they weren't to their destination. So they asked directions from the king. I don't know about you, but if I'm visiting in a foreign country and can't find an address, I don't usually go to the presidential palace and ask the president for directions, which kind of implies that they must have been really important. Maybe, who knows, maybe they were royalty themselves. Certainly they were rich enough and famous enough, were prominent enough that they could gain access to the palace of King Herod, who was called Herod the Great. He was an amazing man. On the one hand, he was something of a despot. He murdered most of the members of his own immediate family in order to protect himself against a coup d'etat. And yet, on the other hand, he was the one who constructed whole cities out of nothing, new seaports. It was he who planned for the temple in Jerusalem and saw to and funded much of its construction. He ruled Israel for 4 decades. And when he was asked for specific directions to the newborn king of the Jews, he turned to the religious leaders and Bible scholars of Jerusalem. It didn't take them very long. They quickly knew that the answer to the question was, in the words of the Old Testament prophet Micah. You can look it up yourself. It's in Micah chapter 5, verse 2. And the answer was Bethlehem, that they should go to Bethlehem. Now, Bethlehem was then and is now really sort of a suburb almost of Jerusalem, only 6 miles away. And the excitement must have welled up in the hearts and the heads of the Magi that after all the distance they had come, only 6 miles left to go. But isn't it fascinating that Herod, who had just been told that they had come the distance, was himself not willing to go the distance of 6 miles? Oh, it's true. He asked for further information, alleging that he might at a later date come and worship the newborn king of the Jews. But I find even more astounding is that these Bible scholars, these chief priests, these ones who immediately could go and say this is a fulfillment of an Old Testament prophecy, that they were too busy to be bothered, that they didn't go that 6 miles distant to Bethlehem. What the Magi did was combine scripture and a star in order to reach their destination in Bethlehem. When they saw the star, when they arrived in Bethlehem, when they found Jesus, the historian Matthew tells us that they were overjoyed. Interesting word. I don't know what you think of as the best day of your life or one of the best days, but you could describe it as a day of joy. But what is it to be overjoyed? It's thrill, it's excitement, it is enthusiasm, it is absolutely over the top. Their destination, they'd reached it. Their dream, it had come true. They had come to Jesus. And if we close our eyes, most of us can imagine the scene because we've seen it on 1,000 Christmas cards. The Christmas scene with Jesus in a manger, in a stable or a cave, with Mary right by him, with Joseph smiling for the camera, with shepherds that are in neat order, with an angel in charge to make sure everybody's in the right place, with sheep who are behaving well, with wise men off to the side, with camels who aren't eating but holding their heads up high, everything absolutely perfect. And you know, it really wasn't much like that at all. What we're told in Matthew 2:11 is that on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. This wasn't the stable. This wasn't the place of the manger. This is the better part of 2 years later. The time in the stable was what? A couple of days? The angels, the shepherds, they had all gone back home. Jesus was no longer a baby. Now he's a toddler. What? Maybe 22 months old. Now he's walking and he's talking. So change the mental image to a second scene. It's a house, perhaps made of stone or maybe out of mud brick, and it's in the village of Bethlehem. And a caravan pulls up, a caravan of camels, not minivans. That's a different type of caravan. And the neighbors are looking out the windows, and some of them are coming out into the streets because Bethlehem just doesn't get visitors like this. Their obvious power and wealth, the trappings of their entourage, and everybody's talking about it. And they come to a specific house, and as quickly as they can, they run to the door and they knock hard on the door. And Jesus is inside, and he goes running to the door. And picture Mary saying, "Jesus, wait, wait," because she wants to protect her child from strangers and from the risks of the unknown. But she's not quick enough, and he gets to the door, and he pulls down the latch and throws the door open just as Mary arrives. And they all stand there in stunned silence. Mary wonders, what are people that look like this with these foreign-looking faces and strange clothes and so many of them? What are they doing here in Bethlehem? And what are they doing at this house? And as for the Magi, they traveled for almost 2 years, and at last they've come to see a king who isn't even 3 feet tall. They got to look down to see this king. And nobody says anything. And then these Magi, they bow down. They fall to the ground on their faces to worship a not quite two-year-old. To worship him. That's not what you do for a king. That's what you do for a God. And Mary, she stands and takes all this in. Mary. So wonderful, so magnificent. Mary, a good and a godly woman. Mary, blessed by God, unlike blessing that he had ever given to any other woman before or any other woman since. She was sensational, spectacular, put all the superlatives together that you want to describe her. But they worshiped Jesus, not Mary. Just Jesus. And then I imagine that Joseph, Mary, invited these strangers inside. If their house was like a lot of houses were then and still are in the Middle East, there would have been a large room for entertaining those who were from the neighborhood or visiting guests. Or it could have been in a courtyard out in the middle with rooms around it. Just this past week, I was in the Middle East, and one evening we went to a home, we were invited in, there were about 36 of us in this room. They rolled out the carpets around the wall, we sat on the carpets on the floor, there were some cushions, there were rolled up carpets that we put our arms on. They brought in platters of food that were placed on the floor, we ate with our hands, and we talked for hours and hours. And I think that's pretty much probably what then happened. Except it was Joseph and Mary and Jesus toddling about, and the Magi, and those that traveled with them. And then, from their caravan, they brought treasure boxes. This past week, Charlene and I were in the country of Oman, and we went to a marketplace there, and they had, I wasn't looking for it, but they had treasure boxes, still part of the culture. Probably a couple of feet high, a couple of feet deep, maybe 3 or 4 feet in length. Looked like a hope chest, or maybe something like the wooden toy box that for years we have had in the basement of our home. They brought these treasure boxes because they had gifts. And then they opened their treasures and presented him with these gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. We're not sure why it's these particular gifts. Maybe they had no significance at all. You know how you can't much remember what you got or gave for Christmas 4 or 7 or 11 years ago? Maybe it was just these were the current gifts. But even if they didn't find significance in them, I do. And as far as how much, we're not told. Although it would not seem very likely that those of wealth and power enough to gain access to the palace of the king, who had come on a 2-year journey, would present trinkets and tokens. You would expect them to give that which was much more substantial. Maybe when you came in, you noticed that in all of the entryways, there were tables today, and there were signs inviting you to pick up pieces of gold to take with you as souvenirs. It's not real gold. And next week you will be offered a sample of frankincense, and the following week a sample of myrrh. But what you pick up, if you didn't get it when you came in, you take it when you go out, they're tiny little nuggets. That's not what I imagine they presented. I imagine it was a massive fortune. And it started with gold, because gold was a symbol of royalty. Kings have gold. Crowns are made out of gold. Taxes are paid in gold. Armies were remunerated in gold. When Julius Caesar came back from Gaul, he paid his army in gold and had enough gold left over to pay off the entire national debt of the Roman Empire. The gift of gold. It declared the rule and the reign of Jesus. Yes, he may have lived in a modest little house in a village of Bethlehem, but he was the true king, even if Herod was in some large palace in Jerusalem. The gift of gold, it declared Jesus' kingship over the Jews. But more than kingship over the Jews, it was kingship over the Gentiles, the Persians, the Iranians, the people of every nation and language and tribe, that he was the King of Kings. Now, did they get it, these Magi? Did they understand the full truth that Jesus was the Son of God? Did they give gold with the expectation that someday he would be the ruler of more than a strip of real estate along the Mediterranean coast, that someday he would be the king of the world and even of the universe? Did they have any idea that he was the promised Messiah, the Son of David, the Savior of the world who would die on the cross and rise from the dead, ascend to heaven, and someday come back triumphantly to rule all of the world? No, of course not. They had such little information. But the little information they had, they responded to with simple faith, and they gave out of generosity. No, they didn't know how much of a king Jesus was, but God did. And God was connecting all of the pieces together. He was putting it together in a magnificent mosaic honoring his son, indicating for the rest of the gospel story that his son would reach out to people of every background and religion and nation, and that he would be their king. And God was orchestrating the details to the point that when an assassination attempt would be made by King Herod against Jesus, that there would be adequate funds from the gifts that were given to pay for them to become refugees to Africa until it was safe to return. All out of the gifts of the Magi. And now it's your turn. So is Jesus on your Christmas list? Would you go the distance to see Jesus and love him and worship him and sacrificially give to him out of your treasure box? Inspired by the story of Matthew chapter 2. In 1936, O. Henry wrote a short story that has become a Christmas classic. It is called The Gift of the Magi. It's the story about a newly married young couple, very much in love, living in a flat, an apartment that was really poor. Their names were Jim and Della, and Christmas was coming, and they wanted to buy gifts to express their love. But they had absolutely no money. They were so poor. So Della went to a wig maker and offered to sell her hair. Long brown hair that reached down past her knees. And with the sale of her hair, she would be able to get enough money to buy a gold chain for her husband's most precious possession, that a gold pocket watch that had belonged to his father and to his grandfather. So she did it. She went to the wig maker and had her hair shorn off at the scalp, and got the money and bought the chain. And as she walked back to their apartment, she prayed a prayer. She prayed the same prayer over and over. She prayed, "Please God, please God, make him think that I'm still pretty." And on Christmas Eve, Jim comes home and she presents him with the gold chain, but he sold the watch. Jim sold the watch in order to buy the one thing his wife wanted more than anything else, and that was tortoise combs with jeweled edges to wear in her hair. And at the end of the short story, O. Henry writes, "Here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of two foolish children in a flat who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these are the wisest. Of all who give and receive gifts, such as they are wisest. Everywhere, they are the wisest. They are the Magi." Those ancient Magi loved Jesus. And out of that love, they worshiped him and sacrificially gave to him. And so this Christmas, may you be counted among the Magi, those who will go any distance to Jesus, those who will worship him and love him, and out of your treasure, give gifts to him. Father, may we be wise like the Magi and generous, but most of all, may we be seekers of Jesus. Seekers of Jesus who come to love and to worship and to give and to commit not just our Christmas, but our lives to Jesus the King. Amen.